Okay, hi everybody, and here we are at video commentary number 22. We're about to begin rule 3. Now, I'm wondering about the advisability that I've begun because we have a pre-full moon webinar coming up in just about an hour. But if I don't make too many mistakes, everything ought to be all right. Once I get my chronometer going, that is. Okay, so we're beginning with the third rule. The energy circulates, the point of light, the product of the labors of the four waxeth and groweth. In this, in the case of the magician, it would be that which is being created. As a thought form, the myriads gather round its glowing warmth until its light recedes, its fire grows dim, then shall the second sound go forth. One of the first sound is produced by those that gather round. The second sound, I think, is generated by the producer, the magician himself. But let's see if DK continues to take the wider point of view and not deal so much with the actual magical process. We're dealing now with soul light and body light and principles and personalities. Okay, so, you know, if I have to be, stop a little bit before 1 hour, I will simply have to do that, but I always look for the moments when it's possible to speak on these things, and sometimes those moments are not apparent, not so easily found. In these rules for magic, the laws of creative work are embodied and the means whereby man can function as an incarnated soul. You know, the throat center is very much involved here. And the seventh ray, which at a certain point does rule the throat center, the third ray, is the ray of magic, and the seventh ray, the ray of ritual. They do not deal primarily with the rules governing man's development, but he has been giving some of these, you know. Let's see if this, yeah. Some of these rules have been given. Incidentally, of course, much may be learned in this connection, for man grows through creative work and understanding, but this is not the primary objective of the teaching. So when we undertake the creative work in line with a high objective, we learn. In line with a high objective, we learn, incidentally. Through the gradually growing synthesis of the meditation process carried on by the soul on its own plane. You know, when we say that, is the higher mental plane really the plane of the soul on its own plane? When we speak of the human being and its soul, we say so. But when we think of the soul or angel, its own plane is apparently higher. And I've shown you that in one of the large tabulations which the Tibetan has prepared, you know, on page 35, I think, of esoteric astrology. Through the gradually growing synthesis of the meditation process carried on by the soul on its own plane and that of the aspirant, who is the man, you know, really the aspirant, who is the soul in incarnation, the man manifests in the physical brain a point of light, which has been occultly lighted on the plane of mind. But notice, it manifests in the physical brain. And DK at some point talks about the diffuse light, the brighter light, and finally the sun, sun-like light. Light ever signifies two things, energy and its manifestation in form of some kind. For light and matter are synonymous terms, and that's something we really have to understand, because we're used to matter in its density and light seems so ethereal, and yet the whole universe is condensed light. By what means this occurs, we will have to learn as the decades and centuries elapse. The thought of the man and the idea of the soul have found a point of rapport, and the germ of a thought form has come into being. Now he's talking about the magical process. Okay, this I think we can begin to see. The thought of the man and the idea. Notice idea is a higher thing than a thought, and is derived pretty much from the Buddhic plane and beyond. Whereas that which is found on the plane of abstract mind is still a thought, however refined and abstract thought. The thought of the man and the idea of the soul have found a point of rapport, and the germ of a thought form has come into being. This is the what is to be created, that which is to be created by the magical MGCL. Well, no, let's just do MGL. How about that? Magical process. And there's probably another one that I've looked at here, MGL. And a better way of saying magical, but all right, this is what it is at the moment. And it's the magical process. The thought form, when completed, will embody as much of the great plan on which the hierarchy is working and which the soul knows, the soul or angel of the presence, and man as a soul, and which the soul, solar angel, knows, as the man can vision, grasp, and embody on the mental plane. This, in the early stages of a man's aspiration, in his first steps along the path of discipleship, and for the first two initiations, is covered by the word service. Okay, how shall we improve the environment, the situation, the human condition, the condition among kingdoms, etc. How shall we offer our abilities and improve these situations? He grasps gropingly at first, meaning his eye is not really open, the idea of the unity of life and its manifestation as the brotherhood existing between all forms and that of divine life. So the unity of life and the idea of brotherhood are gropingly grasped. The subjective ideal gradually leads to an appreciation of the way in which this essential relationship can work out practically. So we may have the higher thought here, but what do we actually do in the more concrete worlds? So let's just say in the more concrete worlds. This can be seen finding its expression in the great humanitarian efforts, in the organizations for the relief of human and animal suffering, and in worldwide efforts for the betterment of internal relations of nations, religions, and groups, and probably external relations as well, or interrelations. Enough human units have now contacted the hierarchical plan, whereby the good, the true, and the beautiful may manifest, whereby light, love, and sacrificial power may manifest, or the spiritual will. Enough human units have now contacted the hierarchical plan so that it may be safely concluded that the collective brain of the human family, that entity which we call the fourth kingdom of nature, is susceptible to the vision. So that is encouraging, and has fashioned its lighted form on the mental plane, the form which is to align with the divine plan. Later, the thought of service and of self will be found inadequate, and a more suitable form of expression will be found, but this suffices for the present. The divine purpose... okay, maybe this is it. Will come into recognition. And still more of the plan, and the little self will be forgotten in the great and general enterprise. This thought form created by the aspirant is brought into being by the focused energies of the soul and the reoriented forces of the personality. This is an important statement, and he's showing us the stages whereby this process is occurring. So, you know, we are as white magicians, white MGNS, white magicians, and there I'll again, WMGNS, and I'll make it plural, obviously, white magicians. I already have the singular. We are aspiring towards a type of creativity which is in line with the betterment of things, the divine plan, as we begin to understand that it can be. So, periods. The period wherein the aspirant struggles to achieve an inner quiet and directed attentiveness which will enable him to hear the voice of the silence. Now, this is the voice of the solar angel as the angel of the presence within the egoic lotus. That voice expresses him to him through the symbol and interpreted life experience, because he begins to have spiritual discrimination, the purposes and plans with which he may cooperate according to his stage of development, and these plans will express either A, the materialized plans taking form on the physical plane with which he may cooperate and in whose interest he may submerge his own, and these are already in process from more advanced disciples, and also that the plan or fraction of a plan which is his individual privilege to bring into manifestation and thus cause to materialize as a group activity on the physical plane. It is the function of some aspirants to aid and help those groups which are already in functioning activity. It is the function of others to bring into being those forms of activity which are as yet on the subjective plane. Only those aspirants who are freed from personal ambition can truly cooperate in this second aspect of the work. Therefore, as is said in that, as DK calls it, that militant little treatise, The Light of the Soul, I think it's The Light of the Soul. Goodness, I hope so. Anyway, it's by Master Hilarion. is it The Path of the Soul, The Light of the Soul? I have it in my briefcase, and I carry it and read it, and write on the very first pages, kill out ambition, but work as one who is ambitious. So if we emphasize the exaltation of the little self, and often the wretched little self, we're not fit to take on our shoulders that function of bringing into manifestation a particular part of the divine plan, which we are to materialize. We would be better suited to help others who have less ambition. All right. So, what do we have here? We have the period wherein the aspirant struggles to achieve some sort of registration, you know, that inner attentiveness. So three stages come about when we can join or bring into being or bring into cooperation the focused energies of the soul and the reoriented energies of the personality. And then this general process is occurring in three stages, and the one of them, well, you know, either cooperating or bringing oneself into alignment with an aspect of the plan which it is one's duty, responsibility, privilege to manifest. The period wherein he, number two, the period wherein he habituates himself to the clear hearing and correct interpretation of the inner voice of the soul and broods reflectively upon the imparted message, and during this period the energy circulates. So here we are, you know, dealing pretty much with this rule as it applies to the development of the aspirant. And, you know, it may involve, of course, a point of light, which is a product of the labors of the two. But this is the stabilization of hearing and interpretation. A constant rhythmic response to the thought energy of the soul, excuse me, is set up. And figuratively speaking, there is a steady flow of force between that center of energy we call the soul on its own plane and that center of force, which is the human being. Figuratively speaking, there is a steady flow of energy between these two centers, one characteristic of the greater light and the other of the lesser light, the lower light. The energy travels along the thread we call the sutratman, sets up a vibratory response between the brain and the soul, and let us say the mind is also involved in this alignment. An interesting angle of information might here be given, as it is my intent in these instructions ever to link up the analogies between the different aspects of divinity as they express themselves in man or in the macrocosm, the heavenly man. The ancient yoga of Atlantean days, which has come down to us in the necessarily fragmentary teaching of the yoga of the centers, and this, as we recognize, is Laya Yoga, conveys to us the information that the reflection of the sutratma in the human organism is called the spinal cord and expresses itself in three nerve channels. Well, that's an interesting piece of information. The reflection of sutratma is the spinal cord. The spinal cord then must obviously be carrying the energy of life, vitalization, via its particular energy, the kundalini. When the negative and positive forces of the body, which express themselves via the ida, that's negative, and bengala, that's positive, nerve roots, are equilibrized, and probably not before, the forces can ascend and descend by the central channel to and from the brain, passing through the centers up the spine without hindrance. But first comes equilibrization. When this is the case, we have the perfected soul expression in the physical man. So then likely at the fourth initiation and beyond, at the fourth initiation, man comes more completely in touch with the monad. And at the fifth initiation, Uranus and Pluto head center, and base of spine center are aligned and working rightly together. Okay, so this spinal column with the Ida on the left, Bengal on the right, equilibrization demanded, and then the central channel, which is in a sense the middle way and in a sense related to Sattva, is also related to Shambhala and to the divine will. So the left is the personality, the right is the soul in this case, and the central channel, which we might think of as related to the soul, is in fact related to the first aspect. This is in reality a correspondence to the Sutratma as it links the physical man and the soul. I suppose, you know, we're saying that the, what do we call it here? The spinal cord and the ethers of the related to it. The physical man and the soul for the Sutratma in its turn expresses the positive energy of spirit, the negative energy of matter, and the equilibrized energy of the soul, the attainment of equilibrium being the present objective for humanity. The sut, and I'm going to make a S-U-T-R. I think that's enough on that. Sutatma, sutatma, thread soul, as it's called. The Sutratma contains three types of energy. Sutratma, in its turn, expresses the positive energy of spirit, the negative energy of matter, the Kundalini energy, third aspect energy, and the equilibrized energy of the soul. So it's a threefold energy, but extending principally from the monad. Now, during the period of the later initiations, the positive use of the spiritual energy supersedes the use of soul force, and maybe the energy passing through the central channel Shushumna changes, perhaps. At first, could it be that the central channel carries soul energy and later spirit energy? We have to investigate this. But that is at a later stage when the aspirant need not, with which the aspirant, for whom this is written, need not as yet trouble himself. Let him find the noble middle path between the pairs of opposites, which is, at first, you know, the path of the soul. Let's see, path of the soul. No points of tension. That's not it. Path of the soul. And incidentally, he will find that the forces he uses on the physical plane will employ the central nerve channel up the spine. The forces he uses. Now, does this involve the forces of the personality? He will find that the forces he uses on the physical plane will employ the central nerve channel up the soul. Well, at least say if the force or energy is soul energy, then does this energy employ the central channel? And if it is spirit energy, it certainly does. So this will occur as the transmission of light and truth to the physical brain. So apparently via the reflection of the Sutratma in the Shushumna, light and truth enter the physical brain. Let us say that by the passage of energy via the Shushumna, light and truth enter the physical brain. Okay, as the transmission of light and truth to the physical brain via the central channel of the linking Sutratma really works out into satisfactory usefulness. So let me read this again. This will occur as the, he will find that the forces he uses on the physical plane will employ the central nerve channel up the spine. This has been there's a certain relativity here of which I had not thought deeply enough. I'm used to the idea that the central channel is that of the spirit and is connected with Shambhala, but there seems to be possibly the idea that the forces he uses are the ones that employ the central channel. Well, you know, as I say, more on that later for a clarification. This will occur as the transmission of light and truth to the physical brain. And this would involve especially soul and spirit. This statement involves soul and spirit via the central channel of the linking sutratma, really works out into satisfactory usefulness, or as that really works out. Those ideas and concepts, speaking and symbol, which come via the sutratmic negative channel are well-meaning, but lack force and peter out into significance, presumably, probably, or PRB, probable, personalities, that's not it. Oh, you know I have the word presumably, that's probable, and PRS, no, and PRBS, let's call it presumably, PRBS. That's problems. PRSB. How about that? Okay, this would be presumably, sorry for this little technical stuff, PRBS, that's problems. Oh goodness, I seem to be caught here. PRSB, and we have, presumably, there it is. Okay, I've got it. All right, I'll get rid of this. PRSB. I should have known that. So, presumably, we are speaking of Ida. They are emotionally colored and lack the organized form which pure mind can give. Those which come via the opposite channel, speaking figuratively, produce two opposite concretion and are motivated by the personality ambition of a ruling mentality. And is this Pingala as it operates at first? The mind is ever egoistic. Why? Because it sees only a limited point of view. At first, only a limited point of view. Is egoistic, self-seeking, and expresses that personal ambition which carries with it the germ of its own destruction. This we see, I think, in the fifth petal and the of Leo, in which the individual, egoistic individual, falls. We seem to be involved with a triangle here with Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna, and maybe it's a triangle in rotation. When, however, the sutraatmic Sushumna, interesting that he combines the two at this point, the central nerve channel and its energies employed, the soul as a magnetic intelligent creator transmits its energy. So it seems that there is, via the Sushumna, and let me do that, S-U-S-H, and this should be Sushumna. There is, via the Sushumna, the Sushumna, okay, the transmission of soul energy, as well as spirit energy, perhaps later. When, however, the Sutratmak Sushumna, the central nerve channel and its energy is employed, the soul, as a magnetic intelligent creator, transmits its energy. So, from the soul to the brain via the Sushumna, soul, mind, brain via the Sushumna. But later, the central channel, the most important channel of the time, has to be, I think, the spirit energy, monadic energy via the central channel, maybe with soul taking its position on the right and the personality energy remaining on the left. The question that arises for me, is there ever a time when the Sushumna conducts personality energy, but it seems there would not be a sufficient awakening of the base of the spine in the early days in order to do that. All right, this will have to be resolved at some point. The plans can then mature according to divine purpose and proceed with their building activities, quote, in the light. The point of egoic and lunar contact emits ever the point of light. Now, egoic is the soul, and lunar contact, the personality, and all this on the lower plane of mind, I presume, emits ever the point of light, as we have seen from our rules of magic, and that has its focus at the point in the Sutratma, which has its correspondence in the light in the head of the aspirant. So the light in the head occurs within the etheric physical brain. The point in the Sutratma which corresponds to the point in the physical brain is PRSB, presumably on the lower mental plane. A lot of information is really being given here. Quite interesting. All right, well, that was a long one, and that's number two, reminding us what we're doing. We're bringing together the focused energies of the soul and the reoriented energies of the personality. That is what we are discussing, and we're discussing the phases in which this happens. We're dealing with the struggle to be attentive at first, and then the appearance of the possibility of working with the divine plan, either in cooperation with someone else who has originated a cooperative enterprise or undertaken on one's own. And then the second, we're trying to hear with clarity the inner voice of the soul, and we're brooding upon the imparted message. And then the third of the methods by which we establish the soul-personality relationship is the period wherein he sounds the sacred word and, blending it with the voice of the ego, sets in motion mental matter for the building of the thought form. And as this, then, the second sound goes forth. Let's just ask, you know, is this the point when the second sound goes forth? What's it called? As we look up here, then shall the second sound go forth. Okay. Okay, and let's see what page we're on here, just for fun. Page 90. I'll do my best to keep that awareness so I don't have to go hunting. It is the man on the physical plane who now sounds the word, and he does so in four ways. Well, in this case, not the soul. It is the turn of the man, or soul in incarnation, or disciple, who now sounds the word, which is the second sounding. And he does it in four ways. Well, he becomes the Word incarnated, and he endeavors to be what he is on the higher planes. Or he sounds the Word within himself, seeking to do it as the soul. He visualizes himself as the soul breathing out energy. And, you know, that's not a bad idea. Visualize himself as the soul, because indeed, the soul is the monad, the personality is the monad. If we withdraw through pratyahara, indeed, we find ourselves to be the soul, which is that condition of consciousness on the higher mental plane, which is engineered by the descending monad, the extending descending monad. He visualizes himself as the soul breathing out energy through the medium of that word. Let's see, the word in this case is the word of the soul, breathing out the energy through the medium of that word, through the entire system which his soul animates, the mental, emotional, vital, and physical instruments. Man acts as if man acts as if he is the soul, which indeed he is. So he sounds the word as the soul. And then this would be probably a PRBL. Would that be it? PRBL? Probably a silent sounding, given what the next example shows. He sounds the word literally on the physical plane. And let us say that this word is the Om, thus affecting the three grades of matter in his environment, and maybe mostly the physical environment. At the time that he is thus occupied, he is holding the mind steady in the light and is keeping his consciousness immovably within the realm of the soul. Now, this is really important because it gives the conditions under which the word can be sounded. This gives the conditions under which the word can be sounded on the physical plane. Okay. Physical plane. Also, he carries forward, and this is the most difficult stage, a paralleling activity of a steady visualization of the thought form through which he hopes to express that aspect of the plan which he has contacted and which he hopes to bring into active being through his own life and environment. So he has to do more than one thing at a time, and DK is always telling us that the successful meditator will be able to pursue several different activities at the same time. So what's going on here again? Let's just check it. The thought form created by the aspirant is brought into being by the focused energies of the soul and the reoriented energies of the personality. And this is operating in three stages. The stabilization, shall we call it that? And then comes stabilization and interpretation. Stabilization, interpretation, and what else? Stabilization, interpretation, and sounding. Okay. So let's, the three stages are, we'll call them this anyway, the three stages through which the man is bringing soul and personality together are stabilization, attentiveness, and hearing, attentiveness, interpretation, and sounding. Interpretation and sounding. Okay. All of this. And then, you know, let's see here. Yeah. And each one has some different parts to it. And in the end here, we have the sounding of the word, sounding of the word on the okay, I'm going to do that. PHYSP, and I'm going to call it physical plane. Okay, PHYSP. All right. Sounding of the word on the physical plane. All right. So we see three different steps, and some of them have different parts to the steps. This is only truly possible when a steady rapport has been established between soul and brain, and the creative imagination must be brought into play to help this. The process involves the capacity of the brain to register what the soul is visioning and becoming aware of the kingdom of the soul. This does not happen overnight. It involves also a paralleling activity in the mind, for the aspirant must interpret. Okay, so registration, this is another one of those words. It also involves a paralleling activity in the mind, for the aspirant must interpret, that's it, the vision and utilize the concrete intelligent faculty for wise adaptation of time and form to the true expression of that which has been learnt. And this is by no means an easy thing to do, but the aspirant has eventually to express himself in full consciousness in more than one way, and that simultaneously. Now, as I said, DK kind of tells us that this is what we must do. He begins to learn a triple activity in this manner, and the old commentary expresses it this way. So, okay, we say, note the necessities. Okay. Necessities of let's see what it is here. And registration and interpretation. So note the necessities of what we can call registration, stabilization, or maybe it comes first, stabilization, registration, and interpretation. Which, you know, and, well, let's say hearing, seeing, hearing, seeing, interpretation. It's clear there's something in the soul that has to come through, and that something does not reach the physical brain quite so easily. Much clearing has to be done, much quieting, much attentiveness has to be offered in the process, and then registration, a real impression can occur of an aspect of the divine plan with which we can cooperate. Now, the old commentary is going to say something about this. The solar orb shines forth in radiant splendor. The illuminated mind reflects the solar glory. The lunar orb rises from the center to the summit and is transformed into a radiant sun of light. When these three suns are one, Brahma breaks forth, the god of creativity, a lighted world is born. The illumined mind reflects, the lunar orb also rises to the other energies of the personality, presumably. Let's kind of give that a little emphasis. The solar orb shines forth in radiant splendor. Now we have the mind held steady in the light. The illuminated mind reflects the solar glory. The lunar orb rises from the center, solar plexus perhaps, to the summit. Well, you know, either within the physical body or to that point on the mental plane where the solar orb is shining in its solar glory and is transformed into the radiant sun of light. It's as if the personality is absorbed into the soul, the lower energies absorbed into the mind, which are absorbed into the soul. When these three suns are one, Brahma breaks forth, a lighted world is born. A world in which magic can be performed. And this literally means, let's see what the Tibetan says, perhaps a little different from what I say. This literally means that when the soul symbolized as the solar orb, the mind and the light in the head, okay, form one unit. So soul, mind, brain, right? This is really what it's all about. We have soul, mind, brain, including the etheric brain, EBR. Okay, EBR. Etheric brain. The creative power of the solar angel can express itself in the three worlds and can construct a form through which its energy can actively express itself. The human being, the personality, is such a form, actually. Human being or personality is such a form, but also we are speaking of the MGL, magical process. The lunar orb is a symbolic way of expressing the solar plexus, which must eventually do two things. Well, it looks like we're combining soul, mind, light in the head, and solar plexus. Maybe we have a fourfold combination here. Maybe a fourfold combination. So I guess I was somewhat correct when I said that the lunar orb does represent the solar plexus, and the sun and moon have to unite. In another way, the lunar orb represents the entire personality, and in another way, it has its place at the forehead in some of the older systems of chakrology. And interestingly, it does occur on the forehead of those etheric devas of the violet kind. So the lunar orb is a symbolic way of expressing the solar plexus, which eventually must do two things. One, blend and fuse the energies of the two lower centers of force. This would be the basal spine center and sacral sacral center. And two, raise these fused energies, and so blending with the energies of the other and higher centers, reach the head. Okay, so the moon, representing the lower chakras, must bring its energies to the head. All the above embodies a teaching and a theory, and this has to be wrought out in the practical experiment, in practical experiment and experience and conscious activity of the aspirant. So from, you know, obviously always from theory to practice. I would like to point out the nature of the service humanity as a whole is rendering the general plan of evolution. The rule under our consideration applies not only to individual man, but to the predestined activity of the fourth kingdom in nature. The law of analogy, you know, the great interpretive law of our planet, of our system, of our local cosmos, of the cosmos. Through his meditation, discipline, and service, all of which are necessary. Man fans into through his meditation, discipline, and service, man fans into a radiant activity, into radiant light, illuminating the three worlds, that point of light which flickered into being at the time of his individualization in past ages. You know, the mental unit is what is being discussed, and it is a point on the fourth sub level of the mental plane. This finds its reflection in the light in the head. This mental unit, where the soul has been active in stimulating its activation, and the reflection is the light in the head. So let's just say the energized mental unit is reflected in the light in the head. Okay, energized. Thus, a rapport is set up which permits not only of vibratory synchronization, soul, mind, brain, but of a radiation and display of magnetic force, permitting of its recognition in the three worlds of man's immediate environment. So we're saying that something has to happen on the lower mental plane, fourth level, probably, before the light in the head can appear. So a soul and mind rapport precede the illumination of the etheric brain and the physical brain, PBR. Okay. Probably. So, it is with the human kingdom. As its illumination increases, as its light waxes more potent, we sense the Gemini is involved here, its effect upon the subhuman kingdoms is analogous to that of the individual soul, its reflection upon man in physical incarnation. The part of man which is in a physical incarnation is the analogy to the, analogy to the lower kingdoms of nature. I say analogous as a causative force, though not a correspondence in effects. Note this difference. Correspondences are more exacting. All right. Correspondences. Oh, how about spelling that? Humanity is macrocosmic in relation to the subhuman states of consciousness, and this HBB has well pointed out the effect upon these lesser and more material states is primarily fourfold. Now, I don't know that we can, at this point, bring in this whole discussion. We're not quite to the hour point for this program, but I don't feel inclined to launch into a fourfold listing and have to break it, as unfortunately I often have to do. Anyway, DK is analogizing between the human energy system and the light which appears within it. You know, we can begin to think correspondentially. Now I have to go back. Sorry. Humanity is the microcosmic correspondence. Okay. Now, if we think correspondentially, we might almost say, if we think correspondentially, we might look to the mineral kingdom for great radiation and include the etheric aspect of the mineral kingdom, because that would be the, you know, correspondence to the dense physical vehicle and its ether. Correspondentially, okay, I think I'll do that. So the human, the lower kingdoms will be illuminated by and penetrated by mankind in its soul nature as a whole. Individual soul to the lower vehicles, which correspond to the different kingdoms. The etheric physical corresponds to the mineral kingdom, the astral to the vegetable kingdom, lots of analogies there. The animal to the lower mind, we might say, because the animal is beginning to learn but does not have self-consciousness yet. And then, you know, humanity, especially in its soul aspect, is the macrocosm of that relationship. So we've been through a number of interesting teachings here, some of them purely symbolic, as in the old commentary. But basically, we have to create, and I think this is the importance here, the soul mind brain alignment, and the light of the soul, you know, let's just say in summary, okay, coming up here, in summary, let us say that what begins as soul light is demonstrated physically as the light in the head. At first diffuse, then becoming more focused, then finally as a radiant sun, light in the head. And also in a stimulation and light on the plane of mind in the area of the mental unit. I'm not quite sure of the physics there, the metaphysics, but okay, that light from above stimulates the mind and stimulates the brain. And in a way, we have the solar angel as the angel of the presence, somehow extending itself deeply, deeply into matter, and setting up a presence on the plane of mind and a presence even in the brain. Okay, so let me just say that. The solar angel of the presence extends itself deeply into matter and anchors itself in the dense physical body of the planetary logos upon the plane of lower mind and in the mental body and also in the dense physical brain, or dense physical brain. All right. So the solar angel is really plunging deeply. You know, it's doing its own version of harrowing hell, as the Christ has done, whatever that precisely means. The hell worlds, in terms of image, may occur on the seventh subplane of the astral plane, as DK tells us, the hell of the average believer. But the physical plane truly is a kind of hell, hellid frozen world where you are gripped by forces which prevent movement and real contact, and it is a kind of hell, and he does talk about that. What other than the physical plane could be considered such a hell? All right, now, so this is the end of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 22, rule 3.1. Is that it? Oh, I've had to go back, and I didn't want to go back. You know, never go back. Didn't want to go back here. It looks like this is, 3.1. And I saw and confirmed that the number 90 is correct. 3.1, the first program for Rule 3. And it's page 90. 2. 99. All right, page 90 to 99. And this is the beginning of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 22, rule 3.2, page, it is 99, isn't it? I hope so. Yeah, it does appear to be page 99. There's 98, and there it is, 99. All right, friends, maybe rushing a little bit too much to get into the Aquarius pre-full moon presentation here in the year 2018 on the 30th day of January. And come back for more. There's lots to study here. I've offered some ideas, hopefully in some degree of logic, but occasionally a little chaotic. Sorry for that. But one must keep moving. That's the Aries energy in me. It's better to get the washing machine out the door at 70% than wait years and years for the perfection of 99%. Okay, onward we move. Thank you.